This is Luxury.
And Diallo.
The hosts of One Song. And we'd like to thank the United Soybean Board for the sustainable makeover of our podcast studio and for sparking discussions on greener Hollywood production. Check out the Tears for Fears episode of One Song and see behind-the-scenes clips of how they pulled the whole look together. It's all on at Heartbeat Audio on YouTube, and the link is in our show notes.
Want to make Mom's Day? Get to your Nordstrom Rack now and score amazing deals for Mother's Day, which is Sunday, May 12th. Find tons of gifts from only $30 at Nordstrom Rack. Fragrance, jewelry, luxury bags, activewear, beauty, and more. Save on Kate Spade New York, Stuart Weitzman, and Ted Baker London. Great brands, great prices. So shop your Nordstrom Rack store today and treat Mom to the good stuff from just $30.
And now, join Kevin Hart as he dives into the minds of some of the world's funniest comedians. This is Comedy Gold Mines with Kevin Hart.
Welcome. Welcome, world, to an all-new episode of Comedy Gold Mines, where we get inside the minds of brilliant comedians. And it doesn't change. It doesn't stop. It only gets better. And today, oh, my God, we got such an amazing mind to get into. Ladies and gentlemen, the creative mind that we have with us is a legend. I say it and I mean it, a legend. This woman has dominated the comedy circuit since the early 90s. One of the original queens of comedy. I mean, goodness, you've seen this queen in some of your favorite TV shows over the years, like Martin, Moesha, The Steve Harvey Show. Not to mention one of my favorite movies of all time. I'm talking about The Players Club. Once again, a legend. I don't say the word loosely. I say it firmly. Adele Givens, ladies and gentlemen. Hey, Adele, how you doing?
Hey, Kevin, thank you for that awesome intro.
It was a good one, right?
Legend.
I meant it.
I like the part where you said firmly, not loosely. See, at my age, that's a real compliment. I appreciate it. that was the best part of your intro.
That's the best part. Well, I mean, and I meant every single word of it. You know, what I love about this podcast is it gives me an opportunity to give flowers to those that I feel that desperately deserve them. You are one of those people, which is why I said I would love to talk to Adele, just to have a conversation with you, Adele. I never had the opportunity to have like a long conversation with you. So I said, why not? Why not have an in-depth conversation and get to know you more? Let's talk comedy. Let's talk about comedy. Let's talk about you. First and foremost, man, Def Jam and your, I want to say, what's the correct word here? Because it's more about how you hit the comedy scene. And it was such an impact that you had. It seemed so quick, but I'm willing to bet that it wasn't. Before Def Jam, how many years were you doing comedy?
Before Def Jam, I had been doing comedy for 7 months.
7 months. Are you serious?
Yes.
Holy cow.
I've been doing it for 7 months, Kevin. I was in Chicago. And you know, when you first, you know how it is when you first start, you go all over the city. Back then, there was no comedy club for Black people. Like they had a Funny Firm or Improv or something like that. And we just didn't, you just couldn't just go up there and get in there. So I had done every little Chitlin Circuit place I could do and everybody's birthday party. And I kept feeling like I was burnt out. And people would say, you got to go to New York or LA if you really want to find out if you're funny. So I went to New York, but I didn't know I needed money. I didn't know that. I just went, I only had $200. I went to New York with $200, but the stars were shining in my favor. The ancestors was looking out for me.
Holy cow.
During that time, I ran into a comedy team. I don't know if you're familiar with, back in the day, Arsenal and Mitchell. They were.
Yes.
They knew I was down on my luck. They let me stay with them with no strings attached. They took me around to places where you could do comedy. And I met Russell Simmons, and he said he had a show he was going to produce, and he wanted me to do it. And that's how I got on Def Comedy Jam.
Are you fucking kidding me?
You don't even understand the here's some details, some real stuff. When I was in the hotel, you know, it was $57 a night. I had $200. I didn't realize, you know, I was like, okay, I'm gonna be out of here in 3 days. They're gonna kick me out. The hotel had a guy who spoke broken English. You paid, it was a shared bathroom down the hall. I was in Manhattan. I didn't know, I knew nothing about New York. I got off the train at Penn Station. I caught a train. My friends gave me a college trunk They helped me get on a train, wish me well. I went down there and I didn't know what to do. I was walking up and down the damn street. Arsenal returned my call because I called Arsenal and Mitchell. I was like, look, I know I only met y'all that one time, but I'm in New York and I'm looking for comedy clubs. Let me know where they at. I was literally getting put out of the hotel. My boyfriend at the time, who's my husband now, he sent me $100 Western Union. Tell the youngins what that means. Western Union.
Western Union, for my listeners, if you do not know what that means, that is that was our approach to a wire transaction.
There you go. That was a Cash App for your mama needs.
That was our version of a Cash App. It was, you go to Western Union and you send it, and somebody's got to go to a Western Union location. They pick up the amount of money that was sent. These amounts ranged anywhere from this time between $25 to $200 to $500. If you were a working comic, I'm willing to bet you probably reached that $800 to $1,000 range. But I remember picking up several $65 Western Unions myself back in the day. So I am well aware of Western Union. I'm also blown away by this, so I don't want to stop you. So you get to New York. First of all, how old were you? Like, what point of this?
I was very young. I had just been doing comedy for 7 months. I got the blessings from my boyfriend and my mother and everybody saying, yeah, go to New York. None of our asses hadn't been nowhere. We didn't know you might need a few dollars. I had $200. And so anyway, as soon as I got there, I called Arsenal Mitchell. I had won this comedy competition in Chicago at the Regal. They were guests on the show. That's how we met. Sinbad hosted. They were guests. And they gave me their number and said, if you're ever in New York, call us. So when I first got to New York, that's what I did. But I got their answer machine. What's an answer machine?
Yeah, you know what? Yeah. I got to explain this to you guys too, to my listeners here. An answer machine. This is a device that basically spoke on your behalf if you weren't home. The machine would come on. You would leave a message, probably something cool. Maybe music played, maybe it didn't. But people would then leave a message. And when you got home, you would check this device to see who called you that day. There were no texts. There was no, no cell phone.
DMs.
No DMs, nothing like that. You would have to go and listen to it. And there was nothing more depressing than getting back home and pressing the play button on your answer machine and not having a single fucking message. There was nothing worse than realizing that nobody gave a shit about you throughout the day than an answer machine. Thank God that the answer machine is gone, because that you're talking about depression. That right there put people in the fucking hole. The answer machine, I'm willing to bet it did.
The empty answering machine, no louder sound than the empty tape running on your answering machine. The loudest sound.
You have no messages. All right.
And Siri wasn't nice. It was a male voice saying, you have shit. Yeah. Nobody likes you.
Nobody gives.
Unplug me, bitch. You're wasting electricity.
There's no reason
that you can't
for you
afford
to keep on rolling this tape and doing these messages.
Oh my God.
Nobody's calling. So you get to New York. You're there. I mean, it's a plan. It wasn't well vetted out, but you get there, and now, okay, shit, it's kind of falling into place. I'm staying with these two guys, and you know what? It's no strings attached, and now I gotta make a way. I gotta figure it out. Def Jam came shortly after. Russell Simmons, like the show and the production, it came shortly after. Did you have to be consistent and like calling and checking with Russ?
No, I did not. I didn't even know Russell. I'd never heard of Russell Simmons. Hip hop, you have to understand, it was just now becoming like this thing, you know, Crush Groove or whatever. I didn't know him. I was from Chicago. So when this guy walked up to me and said, Russell will tell you today, when he walked up to me and said, hey, I got this project, I want you in, I pinched his jaw and I said, sure, give me a call. Because everybody, as you know, Kevin,
everybody
has something that they want you in.
Yes.
When you're a comedian. It's like, hey, I want you to do this. And he was no different in my mind. But literally, he called and flew me out. They sent the airline ticket, called me, and I really was going. But this is how I got to Russell. Arsenal and Mitchell, who was the comedy team, Arsenal took me around to comedy clubs to introduce me to people, not clubs, Club 88, Terminal D, things like that.
The rooms.
And let me do, rooms, and let me do time. There was, Bob Sumner was holding a showcase, so, and I didn't know Bob either. Arsenal walks up to Bob, he takes me down there, walks up to Bob, and Bob said, oh, you and Mitchell gonna do the show? He says, no, Mitchell's not here, but I have a friend from Chicago, I want her to be on the show. Bob gives me that, you know, that up and down. Looks like, yeah, I don't know if, yeah, I don't know if this bitch gonna make it or not, but okay, you number 12. I'll never forget that, I'm number 12. So Bob gives me number 12. I go into the club, it's packed. It's a showcase, it's packed, everybody's in there. I blow the house up at that time. I blow the house up, Russell's in the house. He comes up to me after the show and he says what he says. He's, you know, he ain't even got my information. So of course, yeah, sure, call me, you know.
Where did the want for comedy come from, right? Because you're talking about 7 months that you've been doing it. Like, what was it that made you make the decision to say, I'm going to now get on stage? This is what I want to do with my life. This is what I'm going to pursue.
Kevin, I had $300 worth of Ready Rock. Mm. I couldn't sell it. Mm. I was in my neighborhood. I was looking at people who had been so beautiful, who had been so worthy, looking like, you know, fucked what crack up makes you look like.
Yeah, yeah.
And I couldn't sell it. I gave it away and I made the decision, I'm just gonna go to New York.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I can't sell rock. I was trying to sell rock to supplement some income that, you know, I needed. I couldn't do it. I couldn't do it. I acquired, well, I won't say how, you know, like about a ball of the stuff.
Yeah.
I had some friends help me to,
to
make it into rock form. And I could not sell one. I couldn't
Holy
do
shit.
It.
Holy
I couldn't do
shit.
It. I said, I got to do something else. So I went to New York. I thought, people kept telling me, if you really want to know if you're funny, go to New York or go to LA. You have to understand, I come from Chicago, the West Side, Lawndale neighborhood.
Yeah.
Wasn't no options for that. I didn't know, you know, we were always funny. We were on the porch funny. Somebody just said that on my Facebook page. People don't know, when we was kids, it used to be fun hanging on y'all porch. You was funny. I didn't know I could be a comedian.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't even know that that was an option. Mm. I just knew how it felt when you get to laugh and when you, you know, it was good versus, oh my God, look at her. She looks like that. Mm-hmm. You know
what I love though? What I love about your era, Adele, was like Def Jam, it made so many comedic stars, but it got thrown at you guys so fast, right? Like the stardom,
it should sink or swim.
It got thrown at you guys so fast. And the thing that happened for most was you all had to figure out the business in it quickly. Like there was nobody that gave a, you know, a handbook and said, this is now what you're supposed to do and this is how it's going to happen. You know, the shows just started to come in and you guys were setting your own prices and figuring out your own bumps. How did that happen for you? Like after Def Jam and the work starts coming in, was there anybody that was helping you like set your price and make it this, and now you're going to be a headliner, now you're going to go out, you're going to be a part of this particular tour, you're going to go to comedy clubs? How did you handle that whirlwind as it came in so fast?
I will tell you, Kevin, it's a beautiful thing. The ancestors smiled down on me. That's how.
Wow.
Because once I did Def Comedy Jam, Russell began to manage me.
Wow.
So he did all of that. I didn't have to, you know, it worked in my favor at that time, but I would say still, even if that happened to any artist today, if somehow you managed to acquire somebody knowledgeable enough about the business to do it, still learn from them. Because I didn't try to learn from them. There was some things that happened during my career that, you know, people were saying, no, you should do this and you should do that. But, you know, I feel like this, I'm a person who has nothing but my word. If I sign a contract, I'm gonna own up to my part of the contract. Mm-hmm. It's what I do.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, you know, I learned later about that kind of thing, but I didn't need it earlier because I had people like Russell and Stan Lathan helping me, managing me and getting me, you know, the gigs that I needed to get to do what I love to do. So I didn't have to. I got lucky. I got real lucky.
That is, I mean, that's it's an amazing gift to come across at that stage, because like I said, it comes at you very fast. Mm-hmm. Well, now let's go and let's fast forward. I mean, look, you're crushing. Adele Givens is now a name. So now when you step on stage, people are now familiar with you because like you said, the Def Jam, you destroyed that. You blew that up. What was the circuit for women like back then? Was it a supportive thing amongst women? Was it a crab in a barrel mentality back then? Was it all for one, one for all? What was the support system between the women that were in that comedy circuit at that time?
At the time, there was not that very many women. You know, it's like,
that's what I'm asking.
We rarely even got a chance to work together, let alone, I mean, I support comedians. And I always, you know, early on, I grabbed this lady and took her with me on the road because I felt like women don't get enough exposure. And of course, right now, I mean, I don't know what she's doing, but her name is Cherie Luckett. I took her on the road with me. Mm-hmm. There was a girl named Pat Brown. I took her on the road with me.
Mm-hmm. Shout out to Pat Brown.
Yeah, I got some history of trying to do as much as I can to make sure we support each other. But my thing was get that exposure, because a lot of times guys were saying women ain't as funny as guys, and I felt like that's where I'm such a lady came from. It's like, hey, mm-hmm. man, if he just said all the words I just said, but you have a difference of reception when it comes to me saying it. How is that? That's impossible. You can't do that. We've been fighting injustices all our lives. You ain't gonna mm-hmm. do that to me. I hung out in the pool hall, Kevin, when I was a kid and a teenager. I hung out in the pool hall. I was just talking to my husband the other day. I said, you know, one of the reasons I probably was drawn to hang out in the pool hall, what girls, you know, like to hang out in the pool hall, other than the fact that I was a shark, don't get it twisted. Oh, I was kicking some ass.
Yeah,
with
yeah, using that hustling.
Oh, yeah.
Kevin, I forgot to say, I was also hustling too. I wasn't just hanging out. I was in there doing side gigging. Kevin, I was side gigging in the pool hall.
But if anybody ever hung out in the pool hall, you know that is a, they talk premier shit in the pool hall.
Absolutely.
People, in Absolutely. The, it's more ragging on each other. It's more dozens being said. It's more creative minds talking shit to each other in the pool hall just to win $5 on this stick. And
pool hall and the barbershop. pool hall and the barbershop breed the best shit talkers Man. In the world. I don't care what anybody say. I'll say the pool hall and the barbershop and a good street corner. You got a good street corner. You come across a good street corner with some personality. That street corner can go for goddamn hours. And I'm talking about some of the best, some of the most creative snapping that you'll ever hear. I've been lit up so bad where I'm from, you know, and this is after success, you know, after who I am. I've tried to go home and hit a corner, reminisce with some guys, and can't get your goddamn breath mint shape head ass to fuck up out of here. Kevin, you don't get your goddamn half a built body, bad back built. I mean, just a play on letters alone. I said, these men are wordsmith. With I left that bitch feeling like I was cut with razor blades all in my Achilles.
They wordsmith, like Kevin. They wordsmith.
I've never seen anything like it. I definitely know what you're talking about what you have built up by being in the pool hall and what that's done for you. So I concur. I concur.
Yeah.
So what women? So what women off the top of your head were around? Like, what were the other women that were bigger then, that were there with you?
Well, I mean, again, like I came out with Cheryl Underwood. Cheryl Underwood was one of the first females that I saw. Cheryl Underwood, and there was this other girl, I can't even call her name, but I think she stopped Angela something or other. I can't remember her name. But when I did the contest, when I won this, the contest at the Regal, there were three other women in it. Diane Ware, I can't even remember their names because they don't do it anymore. Like, Sinbad hosted the contest. Mm-hmm. And out of the guys who who did it. The one guy went on to make a song, the rapping Duke, da ha that guy was in it. They didn't choose comedy as a career, and I understand why, because I had to make a decision between maybe selling a rock just to survive and going to New York to take a chance. So
It's not for everybody. It's not for everybody, and you know, it works out the way that it's supposed to. Yeah. How did the Queens of Comedy come about?
Samora contacted me and asked me to do a show with her, and at the time it was Thea Vidal and Samora and me. And she wanted to do an all-lady show. Again, there's some support. We wanna do women. It was me, Samora, and Thea Vidal, and we did this show. It didn't have a title at the time, but the Kings of Comedy came out, and Samora talked with Walter Latham, and they decided, you know, let's try and do a Queens of Comedy. And so at first he had me, Myra J., Samora, and Monique, but then they switched Myra J. out for Laura Hayes. Mm. So, and that's the one that we ended up taping with Laura Hayes and doing the tours.
How many days did you guys do?
I don't know, but Walter gave us a plaque that said 13 sold out consecutive shows on that tour. So I don't know how many dates we did all together, but I know it's more than 13, because we had at least 14. How about that?
And that experience between you ladies, did you know at the time that it was historic what you were doing? Did you guys feel that? Did you guys kind of grasp the essence of what was happening? Or is it now when you look back at it, it's more of a wow?
For me, it's now. For me, it's now. And it's amazing. It humbles you. It's like, y'all still watch that? Oh, man, that's so dope. And the fact that, you know, every time we went to the radio station, Kevin, every time we went to do an interview, they were like, all right, give us the dirt. What's the, you know, they were hungry for the dumb shit that you get off of, you know, reality. Mm-hmm. Then, and we didn't have it. We honestly didn't have it. Mm. We honestly did not have that. We were so happy. We was like living in a fantasy. It's like, bitch, I didn't wear makeup. I still don't really wear a lot of makeup. But I had never worn makeup, and I would watch Monique and Samora, and they doing their shit. And Monique went and bought a Iman foundation thing to try and show me. Samora tried to show me how to put on eyelashes. That is the hardest shit ever in life. I don't blame a bitch for wearing a lash this long. If I work that hard, bitch, my lash is going across the fucking room, because that is a job and a goddamn half. And then you gotta walk around and wear that bitch fanning people all day. Every time you blink, you getting a bitch a fan. Yeah, but they taught me how to do it.
Wow.
And I grew up in the house with six sisters, seven girls. My mother didn't wear makeup. She didn't wear nail polish. She wasn't religious. She'd cuss your ass from here to next week. But she just didn't bother with that. And we didn't never bother with it. So yeah. Like having a sister teach you how to make your face up. I had some shit I never experienced before. It was wonderful. We didn't have no dirt to give.
No, but you know what? What you said is so strong though. It's like, you know, people, the expectation for that to be is what's the problem. You know, that's the thing. You know, why should something just be good? It has to be some bad. Let's go search for the bad. Why would it just be good? That's not right. That's not fun. The bad is the fun. No, it's exactly what you said it was. It's something that I'm glad you can look back at now and realize how amazing it was. And as a fan of comedy, you know, it's historic. You know, these women took to stage and matched the energy that the Kings of Comedy were putting out there and just simply said, here we go. Don't forget that we're here as well. And, you know, I think that we should make our presence felt. And it wasn't sassy and attitudes. It was in a way where it just demanded respect and attention. And you got that the correct way. You got it by putting asses in seats, which is a dope thing. And it hasn't been duplicated. I don't know if it will or if it can. And that's why I think the Kings, theirs is going to sit in history forever, because you're never going to duplicate that, right? You're never going to be able to put that type of group together. Like, that worked because of those men, and yours worked because of those women. You can't recreate it. So I think it definitely stays in its own place in history forever.
This is Luxury.
And Diallo,
the hosts of One Song. And we'd like to thank the United Soybean Board for the sustainable makeover of our podcast studio and for sparking discussions on greener Hollywood production. Check out the Tears for Fears episode of One Song and see behind-the-scenes clips of how they pulled the whole look together. It's all on @HeartbeatAudio on YouTube, and the link is in our show notes.
You haven't heard about the McCrispy yet? Well, then, you probably haven't heard the sweet silence after the first crispy bite either. Go try it for yourself to hear the best not sound you've ever heard.
What's your take now on comedy, on the women in comedy? Do you feel like the growth has been amazing? Do you feel like it's still lacking, you know, a high level of growth and energy from your female counterparts? How do you feel now about the women in comedy?
It's like women in almost everything. We are emerging. People are giving us more respect. They are seeing that we are capable. I've seen so many different things on television where a female comedic mind is behind. It's respect, and it's long overdue.
Mm-hmm.
But we know we got a lot to get to, a long way to go, but it's a good thing to see. And I, you know, I don't watch stand up. I mean, if something happens and there's it, I'm gonna watch it. You a comedian, you know, we don't generally watch stand up.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, I don't wanna hear your shit, cause I don't.
Yeah.
But if I'm thinking about something that you're saying, I don't want
you don't
you
want it to spark out. You don't want your ideas to come from the shit that you're seeing. You end up being a person that's taking shit without even
exactly
knowing that you're taking shit. Yes,
exactly. I don't want to do that, so I don't really watch it. But I do see products on TV. I mean, I'm scrolling through the guide and I see something with Sam J. I know Sam J is a comedian. I know I worked with her once or twice, and I know she was a nice lady. And I'm like, this is good.
Mm-hmm.
I go on Instagram. I look at Rita Brent. She's got all these dope ass videos. I'm like, God, you know, I love this. And I, you know, all I can do is click on it. And you know what, Kevin, what bothers me? Because I'm such a different personality. I like to support people and I like to do it publicly.
Mm-hmm.
But what bothers me is that people think you holding somebody. You can't say, oh, you good. This is so good. Oh, bitch, I love this. Oh, you know, without every time she posts something, you got to like it. Well, bitch, if I like it, I want to express that. I want to support mm-hmm. her. I want her to keep doing it. It's not a matter of me. Why I got to be concerned with you thinking I'm holding her?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I don't want nothing from that person, except I want to make them know that they doing some good shit. And I want to continue to support that.
You're coming from a positive place. You're coming from a positive place with positive energy.
I don't understand why it's so rare.
Because today's time, negative sells more. Negative is more attractive.
The
negative
queens of comedy wasn't in today's times. They
absolutely
wanted that thirst back then.
Mm,
these people
absolutely
wanted that bullshit then.
Absolutely.
I can't give it to them. Look, you see, people don't know. I'm glad that y'all ain't videoing this, but I'm getting emotional. But it was because earlier you said something that I literally just had to say to a person whose son, you know, my best friend, her grandson was murdered just
mm-hmm.
yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
And I had to tell her his mom, listen, don't think about all the, he was gunned down, you know, it was gang violence. He was only 27 years old. My youngest son is 26 years old.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, and I was telling her, don't think about all that stuff connected to it. Don't think about who you were to him. You were
mm-hmm.
such a good mother. You did such a good job, but you're gonna want to, Kevin, I need tissue shit, boy. You're going to want to blame yourself for not doing this and not doing that, you know. But don't do that. Hold on to the good stuff. Hold on to the stuff you gave him. You know how he was. here's the thing. If you people gonna say he shouldn't have hung around these people, he shouldn't have been, but I say he was loyal to a fault. I say he was loyal to the wrong energies, not he shouldn't have hung around those people. You know, that's how you ostracize people. Like you just said, you walk down that street, you see those people on the corner, you don't know who they are. Mm-hmm. You just see a gang of people and you make a judgment based on that. Why? I used to, when you really don't know how you touching my history when you say on the street corner, but they used to sing. I used to go down there every day when I get off the L coming from work, that whole gang of group of guys that people scared of, I used to jump right in. Mm-hmm. What y'all singing? And I'm singing with y'all because I know y'all are just people. I grew up with some of these people.
You see the good.
Yeah.
You see the good. You see, you not only do you see the good, but you know the good. And I think just to add to what you're saying, I think a big disconnection comes from the assumption that so many have, right? The assumptions that so many have sometimes run the narrative. Your assumption doesn't have to be attached to a fact at all. It can just be what I assume this to be. The expectation of negative, the expectation of bad, the expectation of drama. It's what I'm assuming is attached. And 90% of the time, that assumption is wrong, you know? And when we were talking about you, we were talking about the Queens, and, you know, you were talking about just your rapport, your relationships, and how you looked back, you're like, wow, it's such a great thing, a great moment. But they were my sisters. We didn't have no problems. Well, there's an assumption. Oh man, they probably didn't do it no more because those women didn't get along. They was probably catty. They probably did this. There's an assumption that always drives a narrative. So you have to be one of those people that understand how to just simply come from a place of positivity all the time. Like, that's the thing. There's no consequence with being positive. People act as if there's a consequence that comes with being positive.
You're a punk.
You're a bitch.
I am such a bitch. Yes, I am.
Good energy, Kevin. You's a little bitch, Kev. Well, I'm not. I'm just a positive dude.
Exactly.
I like good energy. I try to put out good energy.
It's so simple. Because what you put out comes back to you all the time. And I don't mean it like, you know, people used to say to me, oh, you did this. This is wonderful. God gonna bless you. And I go, look here. I don't make no deals. Me and God ain't in no alley. So I'm like, look here, I'm going to give you 10 of these. You give me a couple of blessings. That ain't how it works. I do what I do because I love people. And it feels good to me. It's really selfish if you think about it. It's a good feeling to do stuff for people. I'm getting my good out of this. You know, it's like, hey, let me do that for you. And now I walk around feeling accomplished, feeling good. So it's really selfish when you look at it in the right context. But I'm a selfish bitch. I like to see people happy. I like to do good things. I like to surprise people with good stuff. It's a good feeling. Mm. Don't we get enough bad shit?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Balance it out, Ken.
You are preaching to the choir.
I know.
You're preaching to somebody that lives for that exact reason. That's what I feel like my purpose is. That's what I try to do on a consistent basis. And what I've learned to do is, you know, ride with whatever people are doing. If you love it, then great. If you don't, then that's great too. I no longer give a tremendous amount of back and forth to shit that just doesn't deserve that energy.
That's right.
I've learned that. And that's me getting older. That's me at the age 41, about to be 42, just understanding that good energy is something that just should be valued. And if it's not, that's fine. Just take it elsewhere. Take that good energy elsewhere to people that will value it. That's what I say to that.
That's right, son. You got it right. Son, you talk about you 41. I could be your mama, boy.
But you look great. What are you talking about? You look fucking phenomenal.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Phenomenal. Where are you at right now with comedy? What's your stance in comedy? Are you in love with where it's at today? Do you like the turns that that it's made over the years? I mean, you know, talking to you, you're someone that has seen comedy in all stages. You've seen it, you know, grow. And now to where we're in times of, you know, I'm not going to say sensitivity because it's not about sensitivity. We're in times of responsibility, word responsibility. That's what I would say. We're living in times where we all have to be responsible for the things that we say, and we need to make sure that we manage our words correctly and that we're not harming, damaging, you know, different people or different races or, you know, groups, whatever it is. We as comedians now have to be more conscious. I ask you this question because you were in a time where people said what they wanted at one point, and it was all of the above. What's your take on the now? How do you feel?
I as far as the, you know, the sensitivity, I take issue with that. It's like, y'all punk asses, stop it. Get stronger about certain things. But then there are certain things that I'm sensitive about. So I have to put I have to put myself and other people. I was just looking at Kevin, I was just looking at something that I did, and I was like, wow, that was so insensitive. I would still do the joke, but I would change the way I did it. When I was on Def Jam, I said, I would get a pap smear, you know, because, you know, it felt good. Basically, mm-hmm. The joke was, hey, he talking about I'll see you next year. No bullshit, you'll see me tomorrow. That felt good, mm-hmm. You know. And then I said, and if you want foreplay with this pap smear, you can get that. Just say, hey, doc, feel my breast. I might have a knot. It was so insensitive. Mm-hmm. I mean, the concept is funny to allow a breast exam to be sensual and you to enjoy it and smoke a cigarette behind it. But the way I said it as a youngster in different times was not something I would do today. It would be mm-hmm. unacceptable to even me. I've experienced people who've had to, you know, have surgeries and who've been through cancer. I lost a sister. All these things factor into the growth that I, you know, that I've acquired since I was on Def Comedy Jam. Would I change the joke? Absolutely not. Would I change the way I said it? Absolutely. These days, I would be sensitive to the time. But I don't like it. I won't say I like it at all. As a person who likes to, when it comes up, I like to let it come out. Oh, I got a lot of, ooh, bitch, you know you shouldn't have said that. But it's funny. Don't attach yourself to that other part. Try to get the funny out of it. I want you to squeeze this orange and get the juice and not just look at the peelings, because it's some good shit in here.
Mm-hmm.
But
it's the curse of the young comic, right? The young comic is raw. Is energetic and you know you're fearless, right? You're fearless. That young comic is fearless about the things that he or she thinks or feels is funny, and the approach to that is risk taking, and you know, you saying what you just said, I think is just so dope, because with age and wisdom comes, you know,
growth.
Once again, yes, growth. And you're able to go, you know what? I can see where I was wrong here. I can see where this should be said differently. There's no way where I would do this today. I mean, I have a couple that I even saw that I've done that, you know, I've cringed a little bit at just thinking about, because my knowledge of the other side, you know, the other feelings that are in play is just it's bigger. I have a larger level of understanding.
Mm-hmm. You've been expanded, absolutely.
In today's time, absolutely. You expanded is a great word. It's a great, great word. But you know, when you watch Def Jam, you know, that was the culture of comedy back
then.
That
was what it was.
That's what the fuck it was, right?
It was so liberating. Oh my God.
It was a different time. It was a different time.
We cussed extra, you know that.
Well, Def Jam, I felt like it was like an SAT. You know how you got 400 for putting your name on a paper?
I got a GED, but I know what you mean.
Yes, I feel like the Def Jam, if you came out and gave two motherfuckers off the back, you felt like you had an edge. You felt like you were in there. You know, if it was, what's up, motherfuckers? It was a quick, like, you know.
It's the pool hall.
Yeah, it's like, it's a quick entry. And I didn't, like, when I did Def Jam, I did the Def Jam that was the remake of the remake, right? Like, it was, you know, it was when they were trying to revive this thing that, you know, you can't, even though comics did it, you can't really revive that time. Like there was a time that was attached to it. And they did it. You know, we had different hosts do it, and they had different people. I think Mike Epps hosted one. I think Kat may have hosted one. I'm not sure who else. And these were fine. It was all the comedians came out and supported. And I was one of the comics, and it was great. It was a great set. And it gave me a Def Jam credit, which meant the world to me. But it wasn't from that original time. And that original time, that original stage, that original feeling of win that came with a killing on Def Jam, it's something that I'm like, damn, man, I'm never going to know what that was. Like, that's a moment where I'm like, I wish I could have experienced that. Like, you're give a whale a tic-tac. I mean, it's the laughter from that joke came from a time where falling out the fucking chairs during a comedy set was the thing.
You you have to understand too, Kevin, we were so happy to have it ourselves. That was the first time. See, that you're right. You can't go back to the first time of anything. That was the first time that Black people had their own comedy show. Had an opportunity to visually, you know, we would have the Richard Pryor albums. We would have we knew that we could do it. We knew that there was people like Richard Pryor and Red Fox and the greats that did albums, but you didn't, unless it was a special, you didn't really get to see them like that. So to get to see all the up and coming young talent that you have all across the nation and on one show, absolutely. It's like when we were kids and the Jackson 5 came on TV. You can't recreate that. It's like, oh, Black people, and they singing, and they jamming, and they doing very well, and I'm loving this talent that I'm looking at. It was for us, and that, I think, was what one of the things, you definitely can't recapture that.
This is Luxury.
And Diallo.
The hosts of One Song. Shout out to U.S. Soy and the United Soybean Board for supporting this podcast and for giving our recording studio a sustainable makeover.
Just like music is made of notes and beats, each eco-friendly choice we make contributes a single note that completes the overall melody. That's why Heartbeat and US Soy are teaming up to lead the discussion around greening Hollywood. We're talking slashing the carbon footprint of production with soy-based alternatives like soy-based inks for printing scripts, soy foam for soundproofing studios, and even biodiesel generators to power sets.
To see our podcast studio transformation, watch the Tears for Fears episode of One Song and see behind-the-scenes clips of how we pulled the whole look together. It's all on at Heartbeat Audio on YouTube, and the link is in our show notes.
You know what, too, man? And it makes me think, like, I hear conversations and, you know, people always float and throw around the names that they feel like are in there, the GOAT conversation. And, you know, I wonder if people realize how great Martin Lawrence was.
Oh, my God. I wonder that.
I wonder if people realize how great Martin Lawrence was. And I want to make sure that my listeners really understand this. And I'm going to have Martin on Gold Mines because I want to give Martin his flowers as well. But Martin Lawrence put on a off-the-cuff comedy display on a episode-to-episode basis during the tapings of Def Jam. Martin Lawrence freestyled and freestyled and freestyled and gave you personality and gave you charisma and gave you comedy with a precise approach that never missed during these tapings of Def Jam where he acted as a host. And Martin became a big star. Martin, you know, went on to make blockbuster movies, etc. But in today's conversation, I don't know if people truly understand the hold that Martin Lawrence had on comedy back then.
Oh my goodness. I bet you every comedian knows. We understand that. I mean, because he did, you're right, he mastered it. And night after night, 3-4 shows a night, and it was always something different. He was always so on point. And even to this day, I marvel at that genius. I really do. I think you might be onto something, because I don't hear as much talk about it as I feel like I should, because he was great as a host. And it's like, he was, if you ever want to host, he's somebody you should just take your time and watch some of those Def Comedy Jam. This man, you're talking about improvising and off the cuff and holding the audience every single time. The confidence that you gained about him, just watching it. This man is, I think you're right. I think he's underrated right now.
I truly do. Just because of what you just said, it made me think about that. When you said it was the first time that we really had something that was our own. It was the first time that we had a comedy show that we held on to. It was a Black piece of property, it felt like. And the level of expressiveness that the crowd and the comedians had, you know, it was everything that was supposed to be plus more, and he was just at the head of it. I don't know, you made me think about that. I wonder if people truly fucking get it or don't get it. Adele, you said you got a son that's 27, 26?
26 and 28, Kevin.
26 and 28 years old. Congratulations. Congrats.
Yes, thank you.
Congrats. And a boyfriend, high school sweetheart turned husband, young love turned husband.
We grew up on the same block. We grew up literally 4-7 houses from each other. We've known each other practically all our lives.
And holy cow.
We were shocked when we decided to get together. It's like, I've been looking at you all this time. I ain't never liked you like that. But he was holy a Jehovah's cow. Witness when we was kids. So it's like, don't knock on my damn door no more.
He said, don't knock on my door.
Right. When you become a sinner, come see me. See me when you become a sinner. I'll holler at you then.
I can't. Right now, your life is too good to come here. Don't come here with that good side. I don't need that right now.
You don't need it.
That's beautiful, man. That's a hell of a story. God damn. And been together this whole time. Been together the whole time. You a grandma yet? Kids got kids?
No, I don't have I have a step-granddaughter a step-grandson, but I call them my grandkids, because my husband had a daughter before we got together, and she's older than both of our sons. She's 32, 33. So that's my daughter. Those are my grandkids. I'm pushing it, too. I'm like, I'm ready. You know, when you get old like this, you want a baby. You want a baby, but you don't want the responsibility. I love the term grandmother. I can't wait.
You want to just, you want the baby that you can come get and give back at your disposal.
You already know. You that's already privilege. Know. Ain't it the
that's
privilege.
The privilege that goes with it.
Ball them rotten and let you deal with it. you were the same damn way. Leave that baby alone.
Are your kids, are they up to speed and aware of how legendary you are? Do you feel like they know?
If I would have told one of them people that I was doing an interview with you, they'd have came over. Now, if I'd have just said, I want you to come because I'm doing some Zoom stuff, they would have said whatever. But Kevin Hart, they love you. They don't give a damn about me. They don't think twice about my butt.
They need to know. They need to know. They need to listen to this so they can see how I feel about you, why I wanted to talk to you.
Send me a tape so I can view it on their ass.
No, I'm serious. I really, that's something that I often think about, because, you know, I know that my kids don't give two shits. My kids don't give two shits about who I am, but let them see a fucking YouTube star. They'll start crying on the spot. Pass out. Fucking Kevin Hart. I had to tell my son that one time. Hey, your father's Kevin Hart. Get yourself together over this goddamn YouTube. Hey, come here, boy. Do you know who that is, Dad? Oh, he's fucking lost it. Turned into an emotional wreck. I was pissed. I was pissed off. But I just want to, it's just something that makes me curious. If they're aware of the legend that's attached to their mother. A fucking legend, man. I was talking to Steve Harvey, and we were talking about you. We were talking about just the women that, like, really pop and have stood out and made an impact on comedy. And, you know, we weren't saying women of color. We were saying women in general, like the women that just were pound for pound sledgehammer hitters when it came to the stage. And you were at the top of that conversation, and rightfully so.
Thank you.
Rightfully fucking so.
I really appreciate it. It means a lot coming from my peers, especially you two.
I 1,000% mean it. And, you know, I don't want to wrap up yet. Before I do, I just want to know, what are you doing? What's going on? Talk to me. What's now? What is Adele Givens doing?
Right now, Adele Givens is sitting at home waiting on August. August. I pushed all dates back to August. Hang with okay. Honey. Hey, it's
holy
Reggie.
Shit.
I told her I want to meet you, Kel. How you doing? Hey, Kel. Tell her you know me, man. Tell her we go out. We go. Hey.
Holy shit. How long has he been with you?
Reggie is, I found Reggie probably about a year ago. Hey, Kev, the pandemic make you do everything. I started doing ventriloquism, singing songs with my puppets, painting rocks. I do everything.
Holy cow.
I'm crazy.
What do you mean? That's fucking insane. I love that.
Hey, I told you, girl. See, I told you he liked this shit.
Did you, wait a second, you picked it up during the pandemic? You just started doing it?
I actually was trying to do it before the pandemic. I made my own puppets. I couldn't find a puppet that looked like me. You know, I want a puppet. I want a little mini me, because I really talk shit then. But I started using these little dish things and messing with it. And then I was like, oh, I could do that. Oh, look, it ain't. So I started practicing. There's an old song called Jimmy Mac. Jimmy Mac. So I said, you need to do M's and stuff, because that's where the trouble is. You know, you gotta practice on those M's, because girl, shit. So, and I've been doing it, Kevin.
You're going out in August?
In August, yeah. I'm starting in August.
Well, listen, you heard it here. Listen, people, Adele Givens. I don't even need to really say much more, because I feel like you got to know her and you got to know about her. You should really look up on what else you feel like you need to know. And her history is right in front of you, man. That's what makes the internet so amazing. If she has dates and you're around in any of the vicinity, I suggest you go see her. I love the fact that you can still recreate. That's the beauty of comedy. The beauty of comedy is comedy has so many doors that you can open up. That's the power of that microphone. You can do so many different things. You're talking about a woman that just decided to go a different route just because she said, you know what, I was bored, I wanted to do something. So I said, I'm gonna do this, ventriloquism. And now I'm picked up puppets, and Kev, I'm about to go do some dates in August. Good for you, man.
I ain't bringing my damn puppets.
That's what I love.
It was just a hobby. So don't be expecting my damn puppets on stage. This ain't no less than Willie and shit. Yeah, y'all just bring that.
That's just a hobby.
Look at the videos.
That's just a hobby. Yeah, that's just a hobby. Puppets won't be with her on the road. The puppets will not be there.
Kevin, I want you to promise me that one day you will allow me to interview you and get to know you, because I really would love to. I would like to get to know Kevin Hart, not, oh, that's Kevin Hart. Kevin Hart, you seem like such a person to know, not just be a fan of, like, oh, I was with Kevin. Oh, I hung out with Kevin. Oh, I did. I would love to interview you one day. And it might not go on the air. It might go on the air, but I would just like that time.
You have my blessing. Look how easy I am. Look at this conversation.
Right.
It's easy. It's not even, yes. That's how easy it is.
I'll roast your ass if I can't get it.
Hey, look, I told you what happened to me.
Little motherfucker told me.
I told you what happened to me in the corner. I ain't no stranger to it. I told you I done got lit up before. I will sit there and just have to deal with it. I would just have to take it.
How do you like Kevin Hart? Oh, Kevin Hart. Oh, you seen the little motherfucker? Because I ain't seen him since he told me I could interview his ass. Oh, I don't know how I like Kevin. No, I'm teasing.
We're going to give Adele a time where she can talk to me. You have my word. And when I say things on Comedy Gold Mines, I commit to them. That's my contract to you.
I appreciate it. Your word is bond. That's all you got is your word in the world. So I appreciate that.
I love it. Ladies and gentlemen, this is Comedy Gold Mines, where we do what? Where we get inside the minds of amazing comedians. And today was no different. We got to get inside the amazing mind of Adele Givens. Oh my God, how lucky are we? We get to do this, and here's the good news. We get to do it because we love it. That's the best part about it. Smile today. Smile bigger and smile brighter than you did the day before. Adele, thank you so much. Tremendous amount of respect, tremendous amount of love from me to you. Forever a fan, and I mean that. Thank you so much.
The feeling is mutual, Kevin. A tremendous amount of respect. I love your energy.
Thank you. I appreciate you.
Comedy Gold Mines is a Sirius XM and LOL audio production. Executive produced by Kevin Hart, Ty Randolph, and Eric Weil. With Tastemakers Media, Emil Garner, and Ian McDonald.